Spring has arrived, my calendar said it, but the winter was tough and it's hard to forget it. Mom Nature distributed hardship and fluster. It might be spring, but I just don't trust her. Welcome to Spectrum West. This week, we celebrate a couple birthdays. Johann Sebastian Bach, gotta get that Ach in there, turns 334 today, Thursday, March 21st. We'll be talking with a young man who celebrates the birthday each year. His name is Dale Henderson. He lives in New York. He and his cello visited subway stations and founded Bach in the Subways a few years back. And today it inspires others around the world to do similar things as a reminder that classical music is indeed pretty cool. Jim Oliver is here with an editor of a book that features letters home from a Civil War soldier. Michael Larson teaches history in Menominee, and the book is History in the First Degree. The Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra has a couple concerts next weekend. Featured guest conductor Ivar Lundy Jr., a familiar name thanks to his many years swinging the baton in front of the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra. We'll talk with Ivar today. And we begin with the fact that Chippewa Falls looks awfully young for its age. Would you believe it's 150 already? Why, the day it was incorporated seems like only yesterday. And actually, the day it was incorporated, March 25th, a commemoration of that, is only days away. It kicks off an entire year of looking back and looking ahead. One of the big events here at the beginning of the celebration is Chippewa Falls 1869, The Musical, an original play written and directed by Jerry and Carol Way, and featuring a cast of dozens. It hits the stage of the Heide Center beginning next Thursday, running through Sunday. Jerry Way stopped by the other day, and as he often does, he brought his guitar. As of next Monday, this whole sesquicentennial celebration begins, and some of you guys are involved in that celebration.
We are, and March 25th is the date of the original proclamation proclaiming Chippewa Falls an incorporated city. It coincidentally ended up being right the Monday before our performance of the show about that very year, 1869.
Yeah, that's crazy stuff. So that celebration on Monday the 25th begins at 6 p.m. You guys are going to preview a couple of songs that are from the musical, or are these different?
These are songs from the musical,
okay,
yes.
All right. Our topic is Chippewa Falls 1860. I almost said 1969.
Yeah, that's a long time
That was
ago.
A big year, though,
yeah.
Too. Chippewa Falls, that was Woodstock's year. Chippewa Falls 1869. You know, when I think about things like this, it just, and I'm sure you're like this because you've delved into it, wouldn't you love to visit Chippewa Falls 1869 just for a day? Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah, yeah.
I bet that's what museums are for.
Well, I guess right? They are.
About that sentiment, you must have had fun researching this.
I did. The research has really gone on for maybe 15 years because we've been doing historical shows. But everything kind of pointed to that year, 1869, because many of the original pioneers were alive at that time.
Yeah.
Some were young, some were old. That's the year that it became a city, but also there was a big fire downtown that destroyed all the wood buildings. There was a flood that washed millions of logs downstream.
Speaking of logging, there was also a logging war, I see.
There was, and it was called the Beef Slough War. Near Durand, the Chippewa River divides into two channels, the slow-moving Beef Slough Channel and then the regular channel. This logging company down there, the Beef Slough Company, the Chippewa Falls Company claimed they were diverting logs into their channel and selling them as their own.
Hmm.
Yeah, so that resulted in a major feud between the two, the Chippewa Lumber and Boom Company and the Beef Slough Lumber Company.
Being as big as that process would seem to be, it would be tough to get away with that, wouldn't you think?
It would, because they were all branded. They must have been altering the marks on the logs in order to do that.
So you know all those things.
Yeah,
already.
But then in the story, they have their own side of the story. Their side of the story was that Thaddeus Pound, that owned the Chippewa Lumber and Boom Company, was flooding the market and making the market price of logs going down. So they were just simply diverting some logs to improve the market. And that's the Beef Slough side of the story.
Is there anything in Chippewa Falls named after him? Is there a pound something?
Yeah, you know, in fact, the area that I live in is called the Pound Addition.
No kidding.
And he and his wife, Emily, established that addition in Chippewa Falls on the West Hill.
Wow. I'm glad I asked that. Now, the Wayward Players, here's the way it reads, celebrate the 150th anniversary of the incorporation of Chippewa Falls by portraying the community's colorful founders and their true-to-life struggles and adventures. So all of those struggles and adventures are part of... Now, again, I'm thinking that your songs are original tunes, but they're not.
Not for this show. This is the first show I've written where I've used existing melodies for the songs. And the reason being that it's so long ago that these songs that were well known at the time are public domain. Mm-hmm. So it's legal to use them and write new words for them, as I did. Some of the original words, but added new words to fit our story.
Wayward Players. Do you know what the word wayward actually means, the definition of wayward?
I have a feeling you can tell me.
I can. It means difficult to control or predict because of unusual behavior.
That's us. That's the Wayward Players.
That fits. Somehow I knew you'd say that. Yeah. Now, you did this show back in 2011, I understand, and now coming up for the sesquicentennial, you have new wrinkles, you've added three new scenes, and a couple of songs.
Yes, our Wayward Players group has grown in the years since 2011.
I saw that too. Wow.
In order to have roles for everyone and tell really the Beef Slough side of the story,
sure.
I came up with two fictitious scenes. These are kind of nonsense, but they're set in the Beef Slough Saloon. Down near
Try to
Durant,
say that fast three times.
And, which Beef is Slough fictitious. Saloon. You know, and the Beef Slough boys are visited in their saloon by the Temperance Union ladies.
Oh, boy.
And they have traveled down there by covered wagon from Eau Claire to get the Beef Slough boys to stop their drinking. Go on the wagon.
And we have to show up to see if they succeed. Right?
Yeah, right.
For the show?
Do they or don't they?
I mentioned two new songs. Speaking of songs, how about an hors d'oeuvre of something that's going to be in the show?
Baseball was being played at that time in Chippewa Falls. Okay. A man named Theodore Coleman organized the first team. We have them in the play. They're playing a game against the Beef Slough boys.
Okay.
And they're eating peanuts. A nickname for peanuts is Goober Peas. And
yes,
this is the well-known
yes,
song.
I love that song.
At the baseball diamond Sunday afternoon, folks all come together, sing this little tune. But still another pleasure enchantinger than these is wearing out your molars, eating goober peas. Peas, 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 eating goober peas. Goodness, how delicious, eating goober peas. With the bases loaded, Coleman comes to bat, waving at the home crowd as he tips his hat. He turns around in wonder, and what do you think he sees? Well, every player out there is eating goober peas. Peas, 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 eating goober peas.
Sing along.
Goodness, how delicious, eating goober peas.
Yes. Uh-huh. I used to sing that song when I was a kid.
I did, too, in grade school.
Wow. Hey, by the way, do you know, I'm looking ahead already to the 175th birthday of Chippewa Falls, which of course you'll be a part of as well. You'll probably have another musical. Sesquicentennial is hard enough to say.
The
word for 175, there's actually two of them in existence. You ready?
Yeah, that's a surprise.
Demi-semi-sep-centennial. That's one.
Okay.
Or quarto sept centennial.
Oh, I like that one.
So you could put that into your...
In 25 years. Well, really, when we finished it, doing it in 2011, someone said they did the math. In 2019, it'll be the sesquicentennial. We should do the show again. And we all had a good laugh because at that time, it seemed like a long time in the future.
Yeah, no kidding.
Here we are.
And here we are. Yeah, time flies when you're having fun. Historical ingredients of the show. You're well known for having backdrops and stuff like that. People will learn things from seeing
this. Yes. And the backdrops for this show are stunning. My wife, Carol, has done the backdrops as paintings that are projected fill the whole screen at the back. And then in the mid-ground, there are painted physical backdrops. Mm-hmm. We can travel to, I think it is 14 different places during the show, from the forest with a Ojibwe wigwam to the parlor of Hiram and Marie Allen, mm-hmm. to the Chippa Lumber and Boom office, to the baseball game, to, you know, onward. And we're instantly transported to all those places, and they are just stunning to look
cool.
at.
Cool. You talked about the cast. I understand that it's almost doubled.
Yes.
Is it tough to manage 40 people in the cast?
Sometimes. I have a lot of good help. Our assistant directors, Roberta Rasmus and Amanda Tanzer Schaefer, they keep everyone corralled and whipped into shape.
A little more than 25% of those 40 were in the original play.
That's right. Now, there are two that are sadly not with us, both passed away. Wendy Kafusman Keys and Gary Garten. We're dedicating the show to them.
Good gesture. So let's, Jerry, make the 150th anniversary the time that we get everyone on the same page, and let's make it official. Is it Irvine or Irvin?
It is Irvin. That's the family name of William Irvin, and that is the way their family pronounces the name, because his daughter visited Chippewa Falls a few years back and said, you know, we pronounce our family name Irvin.
So after this celebration, this big commemoration, this 150th, we will never, ever hear Irvine again.
I think it's always going to be tomato, tomato. I just...
Really?
I have a feeling. But I think that the Irvine really is growing. I'm hearing it more and more.
And I'm one who have said Irvine all these years, only because that's what I heard in Chippewa Falls.
Me too, yeah.
Okay, you have one more song. You're going to
treat us. And Thaddeus Pound is running for lieutenant governor, and he was successful.
Hmm.
And he did go on and become a congressman, in fact. He was a big politician. Yeah. So this is a song called Campaign Races. You'll recognize the tune.
Oh, I'll bet.
The Chippewa ladies sing this song.
Doo-da.
Doo-da. Those campaign races all year long. Oh, doo-da day. Election day is coming soon. Doo-da. Doo-da. With campaign speeches night and noon. Oh, doo-da day. Gonna run all night, gonna run all day. Oh, cast your vote for Thaddeus Pound, trust him to lead all the way. Well, Thaddeus is our favorite son. Doo-da, doo-da. The candidate who gets things done. Oh, doo-da day. The beef slew boys, they must be beat. Doo-da, doo-da. Their man must go down in defeat. Oh, doo-da day. Run all night, gonna run all day. Oh, cast your vote for Thaddeus Pound. Trust him to lead all the way.
I could see how he would win with a song like that. It's called Chippewa Falls 1869, The Musical. It's playing Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, the 28th through the 30th. Those are dinner shows. Begin at 6:30 with food, and then 7:30 is showtime. And then Sunday afternoon, it's show only, 2 p.m., and I understand that it's quite a nice menu.
It is. Carl's Catering.
Carl's Barbecue Express. Yeah. Oh, boy. It's always a pleasure, Jerry Way. Thanks. Have a lot of fun.
Happy sesquicentennial.
Yes, no
trips
kidding.
Off the tongue.
Happy birthday, Chippewa Falls. Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you, Al.
CVCA.net for all the details. If you live in Chippewa Falls and you want to feel closer to your city, this is one good way. Help it celebrate its birthday. Go ahead. You're listening to Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio, and support for WPR comes from Marquardt Toyota, dedicated to providing an enjoyable and stress-free buying process with welcoming facilities. Located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or at marquardttoyota.com. Ivar Lundy Jr., as music director of the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra, was a regular guest here since handing the baton to Frank Watkins. Our conversations have since been few, even though he stays very busy with music and film projects, as well as tutoring a new family member of the canine persuasion. Well, he's picking up the baton as a guest conductor for the Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra, currently between directors. Spring concerts are next Saturday and Sunday. It's an aggressive program featuring celebrated works that use dance as their themes. It was good to see Ivar again. Conducting, is it kind of like riding a bike?
I guess so. I never thought of it that way. I got on the bike the other summer and I said, yeah, I haven't been on the bike for a long time.
Well, and you know, the reason I ask that is because I have always heard conducting can be physically somewhat demanding. I mean, have you kept up your chops as a conductor?
Somebody asked me that yesterday. We had a rehearsal yesterday.
Okay.
And I said, I feel fine.
Good.
She asked if I had any problems with my arms, and I said no.
The real question I had was, how does one stay in shape musically and physically?
Well, musically is not really a problem. The problem with conducting is that if you're too tense, your muscles kind of bind. The more relaxed you are, and I feel quite relaxed these days.
Well, that's good. Yes. You look relaxed, as a matter of fact. You not only look relaxed, but you have always been able to stay young-looking and fit. And now I know how you do it.
Oh.
It's dancing. The Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra's concert is all about dances.
Well, that's a clever segue, isn't
it? It is, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
I didn't pick the program.
You did not?
Okay. No.
But you fit it, so that's good.
Well, I'm trying to fit it.
Okay.
Yes.
So you're going to help others get into the swing of spring.
Well, yes, for the orchestra, it's quite a challenge. All my friends have said, you know, when they look at the program, wow, what a program.
I did the same thing, and I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, no, you do, probably. Most of these pieces are very well-known pieces. If people know what you're doing, the concept of what
it should sound like,
then you have to follow up with that new sound that is perfect, and that's difficult. Red Cedar is, you know, basically an amateur orchestra,
mm-hmm.
and you've been performing with them.
I am. All volunteer.
Yes, all volunteer.
Yeah.
You don't have all the people there all the time, and this time we have had some rehearsals canceled because of snow.
Go figure.
So, yeah, so you know, you end up with about four or five rehearsals, and that can be quite challenging for them as well as for me. We have some young people playing with us too, you know, from Hayward and Rice Lake, and that's going to be very exciting.
Ivar Lundy Jr. in the studio with us. The Red Cedar Symphony concerts are coming up, and he is the guest conductor for the spring concerts. They are Saturday, March 30th, that's in Cumberland, and then Sunday, March 31st in Rice Lake. And we can trek backwards a bit and let people know that you were an RCSO member at one time. How long ago was that?
Well, I was not really a member.
You weren't?
I had several students coming from Rice Lake.
You didn't play with the Red
Cedar? Yes, I did.
Well, that's my point.
Well,
yes.
Most of the time you need two oboe players. So if I have one student, they need a second oboe player. I said, I can help out. So I would drive up there and be part of the concert playing second oboe.
Okay.
So that's how that happened.
Was that way back in the beginning? That started in the 80s.
Well, I would say in the 90s maybe.
Tell us more about the young people, because there's a tune that is going to be made extra special by the fact that it's a collaboration with people who are literally the future of classical music.
It's Carl Jenkins Palladio. Jenkins wrote this, what should we say, quasi-Baroque piece, Concerto Grosso, he called Palladio, and we are doing the first movement out of that.
Mm-hmm.
And most people will probably think it is warmed over Vivaldi or something like that, because that's what it sounds like. But it's used in certain commercials on TV, and it's become very popular, apparently.
Hmm. So we'll think of a product when we hear this.
Jewelry, yes.
Jewelry?
Yeah.
Maybe I won't. I don't have much of that. But maybe some of the ladies in the audience will. So students of the Northern Lakes String Studio, as well as Northwoods Strings. It's a Northern Wisconsin nonprofit dedicated to finding instruments and instructors for students wishing to study classical music. And I thought to myself, how many are there out there, young people, saying, I just have to learn classical, find me somebody. It would seem to me in this day and age there aren't many of those, or maybe I'm wrong.
No, I think you're unfortunately quite correct in that. I do have the Hayward paper, so I read about the concerts all the time, and they're quite active in the area. And I was very taken by, well, he had a rehearsal a couple of weeks ago. young fellow playing the violin, came up and thanked me so profusely for being part of the whole situation. And he said this was a lot of fun, and he was so serious. And somebody else said that the kid was very special. And I said, yeah, I noticed that. That's very good.
Well, we need special people, yes. Yeah. So the Northwood Strings is just a string ensemble? Is it? How large is it?
They have on occasion played during intermission, I think, when the Red Cedar Symphony has had concerts.
I get it. Yes, yeah. They did.
And what I have heard when they all play, it's been very good.
Yeah. Wonderful. So I see that the Red Cedar Symphony Orchestra people are getting the most out of you with this appearance. There is a coffee with the conductor that is going to happen on the Sunday concert.
Yes.
It were beer with the conductor, I might show up.
It will be at the church, so we have to be careful with the beer.
Churches are notorious for having beer tents in their parking lot.
We are not doing that in the parking lot.
No.
It's probably too cold for
And
that.
These are Lutherans, too, so
yes, yeah.
You know those well, don't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But anyway, so yeah, Coffee with Ivar, it's called. Mm-hmm. 3:15, chance to meet and chat in the church foyer, by the way, with guest conductor, the guy we have sitting to my left. And it says here, internationally recognized. Did you write this?
No, I had. No.
As a musician, composer, conductor, and producer, and professor emeritus, we all know that. I'm just kidding about that, because you are all those. We've enjoyed talking to you a lot over the years, and I'm just tickled pink that you're back in here and that you're going to be conducting.
Well, it's going to be fun. It really is. So we are trying to tailor this to the taste of the people.
So tickets at the door. And one of the neat things about the Red Cedar Symphony is they always make sure that those 21 and under get in free.
Mm-hmm.
There's
mm-hmm.
a good way to keep classical music going.
In Cumberland, they had a special grant for that, too.
Been a while since I talked to you. Life is good.
Yes, busy. Very busy.
Good. Yeah, you look like, let's put it this way, you don't look like you've just been sitting around on a couch.
No, I have not.
Playing solitaire.
No, not solitaire, but I sit in the couch too much. That's why I got the dog, to get me out of the couch.
He has a young dog, folks, and the dog is leading him places.
Yes, very much so.
The website is redcedarsymphony.org. Ivar Lundy, Jr. It's a pleasure, as always. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you.
Concerts next weekend. Take it in. Cumberland and Rice Lake. Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. Jim Oliver steps in a moment. Good to have you along. Spectrum Memo, the Osseo Fairchild School District presents the musical Singin' in the Rain, now playing through Sunday, opens tonight, Thursday. 7:30 p.m. showtimes tonight, Friday and Saturday, 2 p.m. Sunday in the auditorium. Tickets at the high school office, CCF Bank, and Alliance Bank, both in Osseo. When the book arrived, I thought Jim Oliver might find it interesting, and a conversation with the editor equally so. Let's see how my hunch turned out. Here's Jim.
Dear Delia, the Civil War letters of Captain Henry F. Young of the 7th Wisconsin Infantry is a story of an officer in the Iron Brigade as told through his 155 letters to home. The letters have been compiled into a book by Wisconsin native and Eau Claire resident Michael J. Larson, a history teacher in the Menominee School District, and John David Smith, professor of history at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. It's been published by the University of Wisconsin Press and was released earlier this month. Michael Larson joins us in the studio to talk about the book and what it took to put it all together. Ran across one of those positive things in one of the websites that talks about books, and Randall M. Miller, who is co-author of the Northern Home Front During the Civil War book, said that among the many collections of Civil War correspondence, these letters stand out for their honesty about the hard realities of war that tested one's faith and fealty to the cause, and the maturing ideas about what it meant to be a man. Dear Delia will repay many readings for anyone wanting to know how and why the war mattered to those who fought it. You were a student when you found the letters, so how did that come about?
First of all, thank you very much for having me, Jim. Seniors at the UW-Eau Claire at the time were required to do a major research thesis. Their junior, senior year of college, And as a young man, I come from a family of military personnel, and it always had interested me, and I was very much interested in the Civil War. I started looking for something more local, and I found that Company A of the 7th Wisconsin Volunteers was from the Chippewa Falls area. Nearly all of the 100 men in the company were from either around or near Chippewa Falls. And so I thought, this is my project. I'm going to dig into Company A, 7th Wisconsin Infantry. Well, then, the bad news. Unfortunately, there just wasn't a lot of research materials on Company A. Mm-hmm. So I decided, in talking with my professor, that it was maybe time to broaden it out just a little bit. Didn't have to mean that I had to dump my subject, but I broadened it out to include all of the 7th Wisconsin. And along the way, these letters from this Captain Henry Falls Young matriculated from the Wisconsin Historical Society. I requested them to be sent, and as I started digging into them, I thought, what an interesting man. My thoughts were somewhat limited at the time, but I always had this thought, someday it would be fun to do something more with this. But over the years, he was never far from my mind of trying to do something with the letters.
I'm a little bit puzzled about this collaboration that is involved here. Who is this other professor whom you're dealing with?
Professor John David Smith is the Charles H. Stone Historian of American History at the University of North Carolina at Charlotte. His collaboration on this was essential as far as the University of Wisconsin Press is concerned. While I might think I'm a big thing in most people's eyes, and maybe in my students, not so much in the world of publications. Mm-hmm. Professor Smith was brought on board at the request of Dr. Gwen Walker, the University of Wisconsin Press. It turned out to be an absolute fantastic fit with Dear Delia. This is his 30th publication. Mm-hmm. 150 scholarly articles. I'm not really sure how he pulls it all off. I thought I was busy, but I stay quiet around him because he's far busier than myself. Mm. He did a great deal of work on the introduction to sort of prep the reader on what to expect when they work their way through the letters. Mm-hmm. So a collaboration which was somewhat of coincidental in a way turned out to be very fortuitous to advance the project to publication in the long run.
We're talking to Michael Larson, one of the two collaborators in the creation of Dear Delia, the Civil War Letters of Captain Henry F. Young of the 7th Wisconsin Infantry. Who was this fellow, Henry F. Young?
He was born in Newcastle, Pennsylvania, and around the year 1850, he ended up moving to Wisconsin. Unfortunately, there's sparse information about his early life. He worked on a riverboat, and at some point, not too long after that, he makes his way to Cassville, Wisconsin, southwest Wisconsin, Grant County, old Grant County, as they called it at the time. Eventually, he started to work for a sawmill owner by the name of Jared Warner. And at some point along the way, he must have noticed Warner's daughter, Delia. By March of 1853, they were married. Warner and Young ended up going in together as partners on a grist mill near Cassville, officially B-Town. When the war breaks out, Young is actually reported to have been fishing in Rattlesnake Creek, trout fishing. And at that moment, he was determined to do his patriotic duty and enlist. Probably because he helped train Cassville men earlier on, who ended up in the 6th Wisconsin. When he formally enlisted in the fall of 1861, they elected him as a second lieutenant, which was at that time the Lancaster Union Guards. And when they mustered into the 7th Wisconsin, they officially became Company F of the 7th Wisconsin Infantry and trained at Camp Randall.
It says in the introduction and as well, it's pretty obvious when you read the letters that you didn't really change them a whole lot. They seem to be pretty much in his vernacular.
One of the things I decided to do early on, Professor Smith more or less backed this up, I decided to transcribe the letters verbatim, word for word. So what you read is exactly what Young said. The only thing that was changed at the request of the press, I fought it a little bit at first, but I agree that it was probably the right move. Young, while he wrote well, in my opinion, he didn't always punctuate. So one of the last stretches is I was asked to do that, which after doing it, I think it was a great call.
Just occurred to me, how did it happen that his letters were accumulated?
Great question. After the war, he returned to Cassville. They ran the mill. And then later on, he and Delia ended up moving to Patch Grove to run Jared's farm, his father-in-law. He had four children. He served faithful for over 3 years. But when he heard about his young daughter, Laura, passing away from diphtheria in November of 1864, he said, it's time to come home. He had three other children. The oldest was Jared. May was born in 1860, and his final child, Harry, was born around 1870. After the war, likely Delia hung on to the letters. She passed away in 1924. And whether she gave them to May or to Harry, not quite sure. But eventually, either May or Harry passed them along to the Wisconsin Historical Society. And that's where they've been ever since.
Uh-huh. His letters, to me, reflected his maturity and his reaction to the war. Unlike the Civil War movies that show young men dashing off excitedly to enthusiastically fight the Yankees or the Rebs, he seemed to take it fairly calmly, as calmly as you can be when you're being shot at, I guess.
I think one of the things that endeared me the most about Captain Young, and this is just my theory, when he enlisted, he was nearly 38 years old. I'm not sure if he had experienced enough life to maybe be calmer about things, but he had an extremely dry sense of humor, which really endeared me to him right away. And you could feel this ooze out into the letters. As I transcribed them, I would look forward every day to each of those letters. And I think part of his calmness throughout a lot of the letters, except when he was displaying his displeasure with Union leadership, I think part of it was maybe that he was a little older than some of the soldiers.
Well, there were some horrible things that the so-called generals did during the Civil War. He could have good reason to be unhappy with them.
Whereas maybe an 18, 19-year-old, even under those circumstances, may not have thought it prudent to question the authority figure, so to speak. I think with Young being 38 when he went off to fight, I think he was just a little bit more experienced and obviously didn't care as much. He held his superiors accountable for the mess, he said, they sometimes got us into.
Talk a little bit about the well-known battles that he was involved with.
He was on detached service from March to roughly September of 1862, but he was never far from his 7th Wisconsin. He actually was a bridge builder in what was officially known as McDowell's Bridge Builders. He will return to the company right after the Second Battle of Bull Run. He witnessed the Second Battle of Bull Run from the Construction Corps. He would return just after the crucial Battle of South Mountain. It's at South Mountain where the Iron Brigade received its name. As they worked their way up South Mountain, Generals McClellan, Hooker, and Burnside were witnessing this group of soldiers from the 2nd, 6th, 7th Wisconsin, and 19th Indiana. And as they neared the crest, McClellan wondered, who are these men? They must be made of iron. Essentially, that name stuck, and they were very, very proud of their allegiance or their participation in the Iron Brigade.
Well, we could talk about this forever, but anyway, where is the book available?
At Amazon, at the University of Wisconsin Press website, and the local store will be having copies at some point in the near future, from what I'm told anyway.
Well, we've been talking to Michael J. Larson, one of the two collaborators in the creation of Dear Delia, the Civil War Letters of Captain Henry F. Young of the 7th Wisconsin Infantry. The book has been published by the University of Wisconsin Press. Michael, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Interesting topic, made more interesting by our own Sir James Oliver, which sounds historic in its own right, doesn't it? Time for a look at what's on stage at various points around western Wisconsin. That same guy is just the man to do the looking.
Thank you, sir. The Charitable Sisterhood of the Second Trinity Victory Church will open Friday and continue Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays through April the 7th in the main theater of the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The Old Gem Theater in New Richmond will present Seussical tonight, if you're listening on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Dearly Departed will be staged by the Wide Spot Players Friday, April the 5th, in the Wide Spot Performing Arts Center in Stockholm. Anne of Green Gables will be presented by the Festival Theater through Sunday in the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. The St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson will present Honky Tonk Laundry Fridays and Saturdays through May 18th. The Neillsville Players will stage a dinner theater production of The Sound of Murder Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Clark Cultural Arts Center in Neillsville. Raggedy Ann and Andy will be presented by the Barron Spotlighters April 5th, 6th, and 7th, and the 12th, the 13th, and the 14th in the Barron Area Community Center. And Albert Einstein and Pablo Picasso meet in a bar is the basis of the next production of the University of Wisconsin Stout Theater. Picasso at the Le Pan Aiguille, an absurdist comedy by Steve Martin, will be presented April 4th, 5th, and 6th, the 11th, the 12th, and 13th, and the 19th in the Harvey Hall Theater at the University.
Thank you, sir. Support for WPR comes from Art Z Gallery in Amory, presenting March Hammer Madness Annual Wood and Metal Show with Tin Can Studio. It's Tin Cat Studio. And featuring Brian Hall, Joyce Halverson, and Wendy Frank. ArtZGallery.org. Well, you know, if you're listening to the Thursday live edition of Spectrum West, be aware that today is the 334th birthday. Yes, that would be a lot of candles of Johann Sebastian Bach, German composer of the Baroque period. Did you know he had three brothers and two sons also named Johann? They must have enjoyed that kind of challenge back then. Anyway, Dale Henderson is a cellist, and when he began something called Bach in the Subways, wherein he literally took his instrument to bustling New York subway stations, he did not anticipate how worldwide and passionate the movement would become. Years later, people continued transporting Bach to and under the streets on his birthday, and to get the whole story, I talked with Mr. Henderson a couple days ago. He was in Bogota, Colombia.
It's always about trying to get as many people as possible to hear Bach.
Interesting, as I was reading about you, that your initial fear when you started this back in 2010 as a musician was that classical music was dying. There is that fear. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have it. In fact, orchestras all over are having to be creative. Everybody's hanging on, and that's good to know. I have to say that I see classical music as one of those wonderful things that's, I think, going to endure and be a reminder that there's a lot better to us than who we are politically and socially right now. Might be one of those things that helps pull us back to reality and rationality. What do you think?
I couldn't agree more. The famous Pablo Casals quote always comes back to me, which, you know, he was political to some degree, but his summation of it all was, I see much that is ugly in politics. I avoid the divisiveness. And I agree that, classical music brings us together.
Yeah.
I've been dividing us, and I'm much more interested in that, much more attracted and drawn to that.
It's like a melting pot. If you were to stand on the stage and look at an audience there for a concert, it would probably amaze you what you would find if you went around and asked individual beliefs. So it's kind of cool that everybody can put aside everything, come and sit in a comfortable chair and listen to the same thing and enjoy it in the same way.
Absolutely. It's funny you're bringing this up because I've been saying the same things lately about how wonderful it is for me, especially with Bach in the Subways, to see, you know, people from exactly what you said, everywhere, all kinds of beliefs, and they can keep their beliefs and yet unite on this one, you know, beautiful thing that transcends all of that.
That was what was astonishing for me watching the video that's on your website where you carry the cello case into the 59th Street Station and you set up and you start playing. The mesmerized looks on the faces of people who were just transported somewhere else, and it was very cool to see.
Yeah. When I first started this, a lot of people thought it was a nutty idea, but then I saw I saw what it was doing, and I said, okay, this may be nutty, but it's doing something great.
You've done a lot of things as a performing musician, beginning at an early age. You've done a lot of humanitarian things in addition to the things you love as a performing musician. The term I came up with, Dale, you are a humusitarian. So,
wow, a humusitarian. Humusitarian. Yep. Takes a little practice, but I like it.
Once you get used to it, it just rolls right off the tongue. You know, being that has added quite a dimension to Dale Henderson's name today. People out here looking at you feel that. How about Dale inside?
Yeah, I mean, for me, they were never really separated. I mean, I appreciate that. I really do appreciate all of that. But yeah, I mean, it happened especially when I was at New England Conservatory, and I had a really great time as a kid growing up. And I was very lucky to be in a community that could support classical music. And then I went to a conservatory in Boston, and I saw tons of, especially kids, there's no support for them. And that rankled me. And so I think that was the beginning of it. But, I mean, the idea that this belongs to all of us, this is not an idea that belongs to me. I'm a musician that belongs to this idea. You know, the idea is that this core uniting value, I guess, that you find in Bach, of course, and I think in a lot of classical music, is that this is not Western people's music. This is not white people's music. This is not Black people's music. Well, Lang Lang, the pianist, said something beautifully. I should memorize the quote. Basically, that this music belongs to all of us. It's as if you're a human being, it's your birthright. You know, that was something that I innately, maybe unconsciously, but innately felt, and then I kind of started coming up in the world and seeing, okay, these people don't have access. So I started teaching at a community music center to get these kids good music lessons, which was a great joy. And so I guess what I'm trying to say is that I belong to that idea, I think, more than it belongs to me, and it began to grow in me over time.
I think that's where the word Humusitarian came from. I was so impressed at reading how you had taught at that community center. That's wonderful stuff. It's interesting, if you look up Bach's birthday, there are two March dates listed. One is an old style one, and one is a new style one. Are we all going with the 21st and not the 31st?
You know, it was for some people it was a passionate debate. When I started the festival, I was truly unaware of that controversy. So I just picked the 21st, and I mean, I can't say that I have a position on it or any strong feelings about it.
I bring it up tongue-in-cheek, actually. Who cares?
Oh, okay, because people get very serious. Well, that's how I feel about it. Some people are very, very passionate about it.
I don't think Bach is doing flips saying they got the date wrong. I think let's settle on the 21st. And I like that because this show is airing on March 21st. We're going to be right on there. That's going to be very cool. So now, Bach and the Subway started in 2010. Was the first one that happened on that first date just you at a subway station, or were there others back at the beginning too?
No, in the beginning, the original idea was simply I go into the subways anytime, not necessarily on Bach's birthday, and offer people Bach, flip the scenario upside down. Instead of asking for a dollar, I'm saying, don't give me money, just please listen to this and check it out. That was the original idea, and I was doing that pretty much multiple times a week for the first year plus. And then I got the idea to invite other people on his birthday, and I did that. And then I went back for one day of the year, and then I went back to it alone. So it was this kind of passion project of mine. And then the birthday, what happened was I was sustaining that for about 2 years, and then I was a little tired, and the birthday, luckily, synchronistically, the birthday celebration started to really snowball.
Mm-hmm.
So then I didn't have to carry the torch alone.
Okay.
And that, it grew. 2011 was the first birthday, and then 2012 was bigger. 2013, by 2015, it was this big global phenomenon.
Yeah, that's cool. We're enjoying a conversation on the phone, and he's a long way away, with Dale Henderson. It's called, well, the movement began, as we were just talking, Bach in the Subways. And it's been going on since 2011, as Dale said. I think that was the first birthday celebration. And by the way, folks, 334 his age today. Musicians, Dale, have taken and are taking this to the streets all over the world now. And if someone wants to do their own version of it, Bach in the Subways, we don't have subways where I live, but they can take it anywhere. And that's the cool thing. Taking classical music to unexpected places is wonderful, I've always thought. You have a list of suggested guidelines for those people. Where can they get that list? I have it, and I forgot where I got it.
If you go, good question. I'm glad you asked. If you go to the Bach in the Subways website, which is just bachinthesubways.org, and then click the About tab, and you'll see a whole bunch of resources. There's frequently asked questions, guidelines, that's all there, and then contact and resources. There's graphics you can use, there's flyers you can print. And, of course, always email info@bachandthesubways.org if you have questions or you want to join up.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, this list is, what is it? Do I have to play in a subway? Can I choose? Can I accept money? That kind of stuff. I suggest that people watch that video, too, because it's pretty cool. I'm not going to suggest by saying this that Dale Henderson is not big and famous, but are there really big and famous people who have done this? You know, I read the accolades from Yo-Yo Ma and some other people on your website. Are there people, international stars? And again, I'm not suggesting you're not that. If I said Dale Henderson on the street, people might say, well, who's that? Where does he live? But
yeah, that's probably true. So it's quite all right.
Okay. So are there biggies that have gone and done this and have enjoyed it? Do you have examples of that?
We certainly, in terms of organizations, we have major biggies. We have the Leipzig Bach Archive, which is where Bach lived and worked for most of his life. Mm-hmm. They joined up, and major orchestras. I mean, the Philadelphia Orchestra has joined for years, Boston Symphony, you name it, big orchestras. As far as big stars, we actually haven't had that. I mean, the one person who comes to my mind who isn't famous, but again, is very impressive, is the principal cellist of the Vienna Philharmonic and the Vienna State Opera Orchestra. He's joined a few times. And then there have been some European stars, but the classical music world, the European classical music world, is a little siloed from the U.S. one. So there are people that you would know of if you were in the European classical music world,
okay,
but not so much in the U.S.
Okay.
So I guess the answer is yes and no, but no, like, huge, huge, big ones.
I forwarded some of my emails to people I know who are conducting symphonies in various locations, and I said, you may know of this already, but possibly if you don't, first of all, you should ask this dude to come and be a guest artist. I mean, what better way to go out and get PR for your group? I was on the board of a symphony. That was one of the things we discussed at a board meeting. Our contention was, if we could get people through the door of a concert hall, chances are that 90% of them would love it, even though they swore the day before they've never been to a classical concert, symphony concert, and probably never would. But if we gave them the opportunity, they'd probably go, wow, I'm going back for some more of that.
Yeah, the same premise that we're using.
Yeah. If they would just be exposed to it, that was the gist. Take classical to unexpected places. You turn a corner and there's somebody playing and you go, oh, I like that. Good for you.
I appreciate the support and the outreach. I mean, we really do. You summed it up pretty well. In the classical world, people are aware of this. And some people in the mainstream world, but we really would. I mean, my ultimate dream for this thing is that it somehow, some way, does become a mainstream thing. So that draws people into the world of classical music.
I don't want to hear about symphonies and chamber orchestras struggling financially. I just hate hearing that.
Yeah, it gets depressing after a while.
Well, Dale Henderson, this really is giving back, or giving Bach. It's a selfless thing, and it's generous on your part, and it's designed for only one thing, to make a difference, a positive difference, something we can use a lot more of today. Thanks so much for spending time with us on Wisconsin Public Radio, and I sincerely hope you and I get to speak again someday.
Yeah, me too, Al. Thanks. It was a real pleasure talking to you.
Again, it's called Bach in the Subways. Check it out online. It's fun. By the way, I think we can tempt more Wisconsin musicians to jump in. Sounds like fun. And now, ladies and gentlemen, in celebration of 334 years of musical influence, and might we say you don't look a day over 250, happy birthday, Fugue in the Style, and for the birth anniversary of Johann Sebastian Bach.
Thank you.
I'll bet you never heard Happy Birthday done that way before. Hmm? I'm just a wager. Hey, I've got some Spectrum memos for you. Learn more about the local impacts of climate change within the film Our Wisconsin, the climate change effect, to be shown at the Ellie Phillips Public Library in Eau Claire next Tuesday evening at 6:30 p.m., sponsored by the Eau Claire chapter of Citizens Climate Lobby. The Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra and the Master Singers present a concert honoring Valdemar Auger Saturday evening, 7:30. That's at the Pablo Center. It's in the Jamp Theater. Final film in the 6th Art of Film series is Saturday evening at 7 at the Shell Lake Art Center. The film is Columbus, hosted by Justin Peck, shelllakeartcenter.org. The Wide Spot in Stockholm welcomes Jim Hansen's multimedia presentation on the geography that originated rock and roll in the 50s. That's coming up Saturday. Widespot.org. At the Mabel Tainter tonight, if you're listening Thursday, the Mabel Laughs. It's the comedy of Godfrey. And Saturday evening, the Becky Schlegel Trio. Both performances 7:30 p.m. MabelTainter.org. So much going on. Thanks to Erica, Kate, and Dean, a really great maintenance team. Thank you for completing our audience. And remember to keep in touch on the Spectrum West Facebook page or with guest and topic suggestions via email spectrumwest@wpr.org. We'll do it again next week, we being me and Jim Oliver. For Jim, thank you. See you then.